Thank you, Dennis. Good afternoon, everyone. I first want to acknowledge the co-authors on this paper. I'm the only one from Michigan. Everyone else is from Wisconsin. So I thought about that a bit, and I decided that since if you invert the W on Wisconsin, it looks like a block M. So it's really a perfect fit. So one of the questions that the NITECS team had was they worked hard to enroll agencies or clinics, and they wondered, in the long run, what could we learn from the enrollment process itself? Is there some way we can understand who participated and who didn't, and to what extent? And so this paper, oh, I have no disclosures that I'd want to share with anyone. So that the purpose of this paper was to understand the characteristics of these NITECS agencies or treatment clinics. And we wanted to know actually who enrolled. They recruited from about 638 agencies, but only 201 actually enrolled. And so we wanted to understand what were the differences between those organizations that ended up enrolling and those that didn't. And then once they did enroll, how extensively did they participate in the quality improvement activities that were being offered to them? So Andy just went through the NITECS 200 trial, some of the details, and so I'll skip through these next few slides quickly. But the idea was to identify, of the four approaches, which one seemed to result in higher levels of quality improvement, and then the different outcomes that the study was aimed at. So the interest circle calls, coaching, learning sessions, and the combination of the three services were the four approaches that were being tested in NITECS 200. The time frame, as Andy said, was in the first 6 months, the goal was to reduce waiting time between first contact and first treatment. From months 7 to 12, it was increasing treatment continuation rates, and in months 13 to 18, increasing the number of new patients. Wrong way. So there were 648 clinics among the five states that were considered eligible for NITECS 200. As Andy said, they were invited to state-specific recruitment meetings and essentially badgered to participate, from what Andy had said. And then after a six-month recruitment period, 201 clinics actually enrolled and were randomly assigned. So the sources of data and types of data we used for this organizational piece of NITECS 200 were primary data that were collected from the agencies and from the state agencies, the single state agencies who were helping with recruitment. And then some surveys that were sent to the actual, to the clinics themselves, and then some resources actually off the web. So we wanted to understand which clinics were accredited by what types of accreditation agencies. We could get that information off the web. So these were data that were collected between October 2007 and December 2009. I get this down yet. So this is a kind of a sampling of the variables that we were interested in. First, we believed that whether or not the agency enrolled and the level of participation was partly a function of the organizational structures of the clinics, partly a condition of organizational culture, and then might have something to do with patient population. So we gathered data on size, accreditation, whether they were rural or urban, not-for-profit, ownership, multi-site, the extent of internet access in the agencies, and whether they were hospital-affiliated or freestanding. On the organizational culture, we used a scale that was actually developed by members of the NITECS 200 team, which was a organizational culture readiness to change scoring survey, and also the management score. In the patient population, we had percent male, percent African American, and percent of the patient population that came in from the criminal justice system. So we have two stages of analysis here. The first is to try and understand who enrolled and who didn't. So because this wasn't a random event, we can only really describe the differences between those organizations that enrolled and those who didn't. And so for that analysis, we used a standard logistic regression model. For the second model, or the stage two model, we were interested in, among those organizations that did enroll, how extensively did they participate in the QI interventions. And so in this, we used a two-part logistic regression model that looked at the level of participation in each time period and across the arms. So the results of the stage one model enrollment were actually pretty sparse in terms of the significant variables. These variables aren't predicting, or this equation isn't predicting enrollment, it's just describing the differences between those organizations that enrolled and those that didn't. So we found that among the NITEC's 200 agencies that enrolled, larger ones were more likely to enroll. They served a smaller proportion of African Americans in their patient population, and they were more often not-for-profit. For the stage two findings, now we're looking at among those agencies that did enroll, what variables or what factors were most likely to predict the extent of participation. And so what we found was some differences across time and across intervention. So in the first 6 months of the intervention, we found that freestanding agencies were a significant predictor of greater participation. So if they're not hospital affiliated. In the second time period, we found that private ownership was significant in terms of increasing participation. And also, one of the questions on the organizational change scale in particular was consistently significant across the time periods, the last two time periods. And this was a question that asked really about agency leadership in the quality improvement process. And so the question, a piece of the question is, the clinic saw the project as helping meet organizational goals. And if I were to expand that particular piece of the instrument, you would see how this is actually an indication of how the staff members felt the administration or leadership supported the quality improvement task. And the same two significant variables showed in the final 6 months as well. We found in, as Andy said, the literature before the study took place and also the literature that's been available since the study, and find that some of the characteristics on enrollment and participation were pretty consistent, or at least congruent with some of the literature. Size has shown a relationship in quality improvement efforts in other industries, not really industries, but in hospitals and other kinds of healthcare organizations, which is the same thing we saw here. The not-for-profit status has mixed results in other studies. It's if one were to look at the odds ratios, the log odds ratios from the analysis here, it turns out that being not-for-profit was about almost six times more likely than being private. So while it was a kind of a significant predictor, we're not exactly sure why. Private ownership was significant, which has been reinforced in one other study, but this was a study that looked at medication adherence, not quality improvement. And being freestanding as opposed to hospital-based was also significant. We've really only been able to find one study where hospital-based is a significant predictor to the opposite. We have seen in other randomized controlled trials, not just in addiction treatment, but clinics serving a smaller proportion of African Americans were more likely to enroll. That is consistent with the literature on the absence of diversity in randomized controlled trials, particularly in addiction treatment and behavioral health, although there aren't many of those. And we also found that relating change activities to an organizational goal, in this case, seeing leadership supporting the efforts of NITECs influenced the extent of participation. So some of the lessons we tried to take from this, and this is an analysis that is still ongoing, is what can we say about organizations that are willing, especially substance abuse or addiction treatment organizations, that are willing to enroll in a randomized controlled trial? And how can we use that information going forward in other types of trials, particularly in this population? And so it could be that researchers need to target particular agencies for kind of a heavier or a more extensive recruitment effort. Agencies that are smaller or have larger proportions of African Americans and minority patients. We also learned that recruiting the organization to a clinical trial with a quality improvement focus doesn't necessarily ensure active participation. So as hard as Andy and all the team worked to get these organizations enrolled, once they were enrolled, it wasn't any guarantee that they were going to participate to the extent that was hoped. We've also discovered, as I just mentioned, that engagement of leadership seems to be a crucial element. And so if when we're trying to institute quality improvement efforts, that it may be very important to get leadership of the organization involved in those efforts. So while we're not saying this is the kind of the be-all, end-all of randomized controlled trials and quality improvement, but we're hoping as we analyze these data further that maybe we'll have some more recommendations for researchers and for substance abuse and addiction treatment facilities themselves. I want to acknowledge the same people and agencies that Andy did, and thank you for your attention.